regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad to be with you on the program today, coming to you from Virginia, where some infringements are going to be taking place today because the legislature is back at it, a one-day session to address Governor Abigail Spanberger's vetoes and, of more importance to gun owners, the proposed amendments to legislation. And there are a number of gun control bills that Governor Spanberger did not sign, but instead said, hey, why don't you make some changes? Among them, changing the definition of an assault firearm, quote unquote. So under Governor Spanberger's definitions, we've talked about any semi-automatic firearm would become an assault firearm if it has a magazine that can hold more than 15 rounds of ammunition in it. And there was some speculation about whether the governor intended to do this. Yeah. She intended to do this. Her spokesperson made it very clear that, yes, that was the intent of the governor. To basically prohibit the carrying of quote-unquote large-capacity magazines, even if their possession was not banned outright. Yeah, you can have them in your home. Maybe you can take them to a range. But God forbid you have a 17 or 20 round magazine in your carry gun, because that would be a crime. Your pistol would become an assault firearm. And possessing that in public would be a Class 1 misdemeanor punishable by up to a year in jail and or a $2,500 fine. Saddam Saleem, who is the Senate author of the gun and magazine ban bill, said he's happy to go along with the governor's change. I can't imagine why. So I do expect that that is going to be accepted by the legislature today. We're going to be talking about all of the legislative actions that the legislature of Virginia will take on tomorrow's Bearing Arms Cam and Company. Stephen Gutowski of The Reload is going to be with us. I will tell you, I'm not in a great mood today because of what's going on in the Capitol in Richmond. And then, of course, the redistricting vote yesterday, whereby 3 points, Virginians said, yeah, let's redraw the maps and have a 10-1 Democrat advantage. Now, there is still underlying legal challenges to that redistricting referendum. But I am, wasn't in a great mood last night watching the election results come in, and still in a fairly foul mood today as well. I'm going to try not to bring that out on the over the course of the program. However, I will also say that today's topic is also infuriating. Over the weekend, we had this tragic... I won't say tragic. It was tragic, but it was horrific. The murders of 8 children by a guy who I guess was going through a messy divorce. He shot his wife, shot his girlfriend, shot 7 of his own children, shot a 10-year-old who was the son of his girlfriend, and then either took his own life or was shot and killed by police. We saw in the immediate aftermath of that horrific shooting, gun control activists go to their playbook, preventing gun violence through effective messaging, which came out in 2012, still using it today. Section on high-profile shootings, how to respond. Don't wait for the facts, that playbook says. Get out there. Blame the NRA, right? Blame the NRA for its silence. Why isn't the NRA saying anything about this? Because of their reckless agenda. That's what caused this crime. And they stuck to the playbook. I mean, Gavin Newsom blaming the NRA, blaming Republicans in Congress, gun control groups blaming the lax gun laws in Louisiana. Well, as it turns out, the killer couldn't legally possess a gun. And now the U.S. Attorney's Office in Louisiana says that the individual who supplied that gun to the killer couldn't legally possess a gun either. So what gun control law would have prevented this crime, considering all of the laws that were broken for the killer to illegally obtain a gun? CBS News has a piece, Louisiana mass shooting prompts renewed calls to close, quote, dangerous gaps in domestic violence and gun laws. I got to say, all the hype and the talk about, oh, CBS under Barry Weiss, boy, I mean, it's just a new day. Not as far as their gun coverage. Not that I can tell anyway, because this story from CBS News is just chock full of bull feathers, let's say. Starting with the very beginning of this story. After a gunman killed 8 children, 7 of them his own kids, in Shreveport, Louisiana on Sunday, advocates are urging policymakers to close, quote, dangerous gaps in legislation aimed at preventing fatal domestic violence crimes. The tragedy has also brought a renewed focus to the ways in which domestic violence and firearm deaths are connected. Sam Levy, director of policy advocacy at the nonprofit Every Town for Gun Safety. Don't even call it a gun control group, just a nonprofit. The nexus between gun violence and domestic violence is one of the most well-established and horrific realities of America's gun violence crisis. And, of course, what is their response? They want to make it harder for people who might be at risk of domestic violence to be able to protect and defend themselves. Right? It doesn't matter if an abuser is willing to violate the law, as we have seen countless times before. I'll go back to Virginia as just an example. Now, this was back in, I think this was 5 years ago. This was in 2021, when Democrats took control of the state government. For the first time in like 30 years. Republicans ran a bill that would have expedited the concealed carry process for somebody who had taken out an order of protection. So somebody's got a stalker, somebody's got an abuser, and they want to be able to protect themselves. All this bill would have done would have sort of moved them up to the top of the list, right? Your application's going to get processed first, ahead of all these other folks who are not necessarily in dire need of a firearm. Democrats killed that bill. This wasn't constitutional carry. This wasn't, you know, relaxing the training requirements to obtain a concealed carry license. This simply said, if you have a documented risk to your life and you want to be able to protect yourself with a firearm, we want to make sure that you can do so as expeditiously as possible. Too much for Democrats. Again, gun control advocates, they're not interested in self-defense. They're not interested in domestic violence victims being able to protect themselves. They're interested in disarming everybody in the hopes of disarming domestic abusers. That's it. CBS goes on to report former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords, who founded a gun violence prevention organization. Again, we dare not call it gun control. After she was severely wounded in a mass shooting in 2011, pressed leaders in Louisiana and Washington to, quote, act now to enact reforms. Her organization, which gave Louisiana a failing grade in its latest annual gun law scorecard, noted that the state has some of the weakest gun laws in the nation, as well as some of the highest rates of deaths involving firearms. Now, again, in this case, what are we talking about here? Somebody who is prohibited by law from possessing a firearm, who allegedly stole the gun from a convicted felon who also was not able to legally possess the firearm. That is the claim of the convicted felon who illegally possessed the firearm. Now, again, the facts don't match the rhetoric from gun control activists. Right? CBS News even says, Louisiana has enacted legislation in recent years to help protect survivors of domestic violence, including by banning people convicted of domestic abuse or battery from possessing firearms. Although federal law already prevented most people convicted of domestic abuse from owning guns, it did not cover all types of relationships, nor was it reliably enforced without additional state-level policies, according to Every Town for Gun Safety. And then Levy told CBS News, quote, unfortunately, Louisiana has other dangerous gaps that make those laws unimpactful. And that the shooting is, quote, the cost of lawmakers' failure to fill them. Again, lawmakers are to blame. If we only had this law on the books, well, this wouldn't have happened. Well, what law are we talking about here? CBS News says, while a convicted abuser is legally barred from purchasing firearms in Louisiana, the state does not require gun sellers to be licensed. So those sellers are not required by federal law to conduct background checks on purchases. Without a background check, a criminal conviction could go unnoticed and a sale could be made. That's apparently not what happened here, at least not according to the guy who illegally possessed the firearm that ended up in the hands of the killer. He said he was given the gun by a woman who was going into the hospital. He knew, by the way, that he was a convicted felon not able to possess a firearm, so why he agreed to accept it, I don't know. He also then said that he stored the gun underneath the seat of his truck, which, again, why on earth would you do that? But that's what he says he did. And then he says the killer in this case, he suspects, stole that gun. Says he even confronted the guy. But he became aggressive, and so he backed up, didn't say anything. So, according to the guy who's now been charged by the DOJ, no gun sale took place. It is also worth pointing out, however, that even in states with universal background check laws, criminals are still getting a hold of guns. Why? Because they don't follow the law. Somebody who has stolen a gun, gotten a gun through a straw purchase, acquired a gun on the black market themselves, they're not going to put a buyer through a background check if they're selling that firearm. There is an illicit trade in firearms in every state of the nation, including those states with universal background checks. Now, it would have been nice, again, for CBS News to kind of push back on that assertion that, well, we need universal background checks and then this type of stuff stops. But no! Again, they just accepted that argument at face value. CBS goes on to say, this particular law did not apply to the gunman in the Shreveport shooting, who did not have prior convictions for domestic abuse. He previously pleaded guilty to a weapons charge in 2019, which on its own may not have permanently disqualified from owning a gun. Now listen, he was convicted of a felony. I believe it was felony unlawful use of a weapon. Under Louisiana law, I believe that's a 10-year prohibition on owning a firearm. He was convicted in 2019. So he was prohibited under state law from possessing a firearm. He also was prohibited under federal law from possessing a firearm. And that felony conviction did not come with a 10-year expiration date at the federal level. To me, it almost sounds like CBS News is implying that he could have legally possessed a firearm when that was not the case. CBS News goes on to say authorities announced charges against another man from whom the shooter allegedly stole the gun used to carry out the shooting, and that man was legally banned from possessing guns because of a past felony. Again, both of these individuals were convicted felons. Both of them were prohibited from possessing firearms. And again, that would have been a perfect opportunity for CBS News to maybe engage in some pushback against the claims of the gun control advocates. What do they do instead? Carry their water. But experts say other measures could be put in place to keep someone without criminal convictions from obtaining a firearm if they're in a crisis. Now, again, in this case, the guy had a criminal conviction, right? So now, instead of talking about this particular case, CBS News is, again, extrapolating this to other cases, hypothetical situations, in order to name and shame Louisiana for not having a particular gun control statute on the books. In this case, a red flag law. Louisiana lacks an extreme risk law, also known as a red flag law, which would enable loved ones or police to seek a court order to temporarily bar a person's access to guns. Such measures, Levy said, can, quote, empower people who recognize dangerous warning signs and someone they know to, quote, take steps to ensure that person is prohibited from buying guns in the future, but also make sure they don't have access to guns right now. No, red flag laws don't make sure that somebody doesn't have access to a firearm. What red flags laws do is say, okay, if you legally own a gun, you got to turn them over. In some states, it may empower police to actually go into that person's home, search for any firearms. But then after that, the person's left to their own devices. They can go out and buy a gun on the black market. They can go out and steal a gun. They can go out and ask somebody to buy a gun for them via a straw purchase. Why? Because they're out and about. And yes, they can also pick up a knife. They can pick up a can of gasoline and a lighter or a pack of matches. They can use their vehicle as a murder weapon. Because red flag laws don't address the dangerousness of an individual. They address legal gun ownership. That's it. You know, we just saw, in fact, and again, this doesn't even get into the situations, the lack of due process, the abuse of red flag laws. You know, what was it? Was it Colorado? I think it was. We were talking about this a couple weeks ago. Their latest red flag report shows that in the case of these ex parte hearings, these emergency orders, judges approve like 90% of them. When it comes to final orders, though, those permanent orders, where somebody is allowed to be at that hearing, present a defense, I think overall it's less than half of these orders are approved. I think it's something like 60% of red flag orders that were initiated by law enforcement are approved. But overall, I think it's like 48, 49%, which suggests, again, that given the number of cases that are approved on an emergency basis, the judges are simply rubber stamping these things, at least in these ex parte hearings. But again, no criticism of red flag laws allowed. Nothing to point out the fundamental problem with a red flag law in addressing violence. And remember, defenders and supporters of red flag laws, their best evidence that these things work is research that shows that for every, what is it, a 13 to 20 red flag orders that are issued, one suicide is prevented. I mean, that's at best like a 7% success rate, maybe 5% success rate. And I can talk about the problems with the red flag laws for an hour. I wish that CBS News had spent 15 seconds talking about some of the issues with red flag laws. They quote Every Town's Levy again, saying this is the human toll of lives lost and a whole community traumatized by failures to put even the most basic safeguards in place to ensure that guns don't end up in or stay in the hands of people who pose a threat to themselves or others, including their children and families. Now, again, keep in mind, this individual was prohibited by law from possessing a firearm. According to the guy who illegally owned the firearm that was used in this crime, it was stolen from him, which is another crime. So what safeguards would have stopped the theft of a firearm or the black market sale of a firearm? Again, that's not a gotcha question. That's a basic question. And it is an act of journalistic malpractice that question was not posed to Levy. And instead, CBS News essentially carries what is a press release for the gun control lobby. They also give Angela Farrell Zabala, the executive director of Moms Demand Action, the last word in this story. Say, quote, every day in America, domestic abusers are armed, and women and children disproportionately black play the cost with their lives. Eight babies just had their future stolen in an act of violence that should never have been possible. I wish that it had not been possible. And there were failures here. Apparently, this killer was taken to a Veterans Administration hospital at some point in the not-too-distant past for mental health evaluation. Hindsight is 20/20, but I think we can all agree that this guy probably should have been institutionalized. Clearly had some issues, right? But again, what law was lacking in Louisiana that would have prevented this crime? And the answer is none. Because this gun was acquired through criminal means. If we believe the word of the guy who illegally possessed the firearm that was used in this crime, it was stolen from him. But again, he wasn't allowed to possess it either. Now, it is possible that the gun wasn't stolen, that maybe this guy, Charles Ford, I believe is his name, maybe he sold the gun under the table to this killer. Again, right now, I don't know. We don't know. We'll see what evidence prosecutors have. But either way, the killer obtained this gun by breaking the laws that are already in place. So what additional laws would have prevented this crime? Again, that's not a gotcha question. but it does refute the entire premise of this CBS News report. Because the truth is, there is no law that you could put in place that will stop somebody from illegally acquiring a firearm, that will stop somebody from breaking the law. You can't put a law in place to stop somebody from breaking the law. Emily May Zecker is the reporter for CBS News here. And I call her out specifically because, again, this is journalistic malpractice. This is nonsense. The entire premise of this story is nonsense. And instead, it is nothing more than a platform given to gun control advocates to lobby for laws that would not have to exploit this tragedy and demand laws that would not have prevented this tragedy. This is a family-friendly podcast, so I cannot say what I would really like to say about the decision to run this report. But, yeah, again, you know, everybody who is excited about, oh, a new day at CBS. Not when it comes to its coverage of gun control and Second Amendment issues. Nope. Same old, same old. All right. On to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there with a case out of Houston, Texas, where the local DA in Harris County wanted a $250,000 bond for a student who's accused of bringing a gun to school for a second time. A judge, however, disagreed with that decision. Osvin Cruz first brought a gun to school last year when he was, I believe, 17. He ended up pleading guilty to possession of a prohibited weapon, and he was granted deferred probation. No jail time, no juvie, just stay out of trouble. You know, check in with your probation officer once in a while, and this charge will be wiped off your record. It's all good. Well, Osvin Cruz couldn't abide by the terms of his probation, apparently, because on April 15th, police say he brought a gun to high school. Cruz is now 18 years old. He's charged as an adult in this case, and because it is his second alleged offense, the DA's office asked 487th District Court Judge Stacey Allen Barrow to set Cruz's bond at $250,000. We told him a year ago, keep your nose clean and, you know, stay out of trouble, and this charge will get wiped off your record. And instead, he's now accused of doing the same damn thing, Your Honor. So we want a serious bond here. The judge said, no. $250,000? Nah. How about $25,000? And Osvin Cruz and his family paid that bond. Cruz walked out of jail. Fox 26 in Houston says another judge's reaction to bringing a gun to school was much different. 2 days after Osvin Cruz allegedly brought a gun to Elsick High School, 18-year-old Joshua Bardot allegedly brought a gun to Tomball High School. It was his first offense. DA requested a $15,000 bond, which, again, I mean, not only that the judge had a different reaction, but the DA's office apparently had a very different reaction. $15,000 bond instead of $250,000 bond. But due to the seriousness of the charge, Fox 26 reports, 248th Criminal District Judge Hillary Unger set Bardot's bond at $50,000. Not $250,000, but more than what the prosecutors were asking for. I'm curious, by the way, as why the Harris County DA's office asked for just $15,000 bond for this kid who brought a young adult, 18 years old, brought a gun to a high school in Tomball, Texas. Fox 26 says, obviously most students are juveniles. They're handled in the juvenile court system when they take firearms to school. But Andy Cahan with Houston Crime Stoppers is asking Texas legislators to consider creating a law that would list those who take guns to campuses in a database, bringing more public awareness. Here's the problem. Juvenile privacy concerns, I think, makes that a non-starter. This information, though, is available to law enforcement. It is available to prosecutors. It is available to judges. And that's where the problem lies here, right? Is when you've got judges and in some cases prosecutors who aren't taking this seriously. We're told it's a very serious offense, but it's not treated like a very serious offense in many cases in the criminal justice system. So, you know, a database that lists every 16, 17, 15, 12-year-old who brings a gun to school, I can understand, again, why parents would want that information. I just don't know that they're going to get it. Again, because of privacy concerns about juveniles in the criminal justice system. But what we really need is accountability. And what we really need are, you know, prosecutors and judges who actually take these offenses seriously instead of looking for a reason to give these individuals a slap on the wrist. Today's armed citizen story from Phoenix, Arizona, where an intruder was killed after forcing his way into a home in Phoenix. This was, I think, over the weekend. April 18th. So yeah, this was a Saturday. Don't have a ton of information about this. It was just about 3:15 Saturday morning. Officer said a 25-year-old named Isaac Nathaniel Cordova Fregoso forced his way into a home in Phoenix. There were multiple residents inside who, according to police, confronted the man and shot Cordova Fregoso at least once. He was found inside the home with at least one gunshot wound when police arrived. He passed away at the scene from his injuries. Phoenix police interviewed the resident who shot Cordova Fregoso and said that the account provided by that individual was consistent with the findings at the scene, and the individual was released pending further investigation. So, resident said he shot this intruder in self-defense. That story matches, again, the physical evidence that Cordova Fregoso forces entry into that home. No arrests were made. This will be submitted to a grand jury, but unless police uncover something, you know, wildly different than their initial investigation, this is going to be considered a justifiable use of force. Fox 10 in Phoenix says it's unclear if the shooter and the intruder were known to each other. The shooter's identity was not released because typically we don't release the names of crime victims. And he's not been charged with a crime, or she. We don't know even the gender of this individual. We may get some more details. Honestly, we may not. But if we do, we'll certainly provide them to you. Finally today, our good deed of the day. In the right place at the right time. Willing and able to do the right thing. Some college students in La Crosse, Wisconsin, who were able to save a man trapped in an apartment fire. The students, Caden Brenneman Sorensen and Charles Mraz, I believe. Brenneman Sorensen is a student at the University of Wisconsin, La Crosse. Mraz is a student at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. And they were sitting in Mraz's apartment when they noticed smoke coming from a nearby building. So they were curious. They decided to go check it out. As it got closer, they realized, it's an actual fire. And Mraz said when we approached it is when we realized how big it was actually becoming. So the two started knocking on doors, trying to activate the fire alarms to alert residents. Brenneman Sorensen said the smoke really started to build up and the fire started to expand. Mraz says they actually had to kind of back up because he said it really caught a blaze. And some lady said, there's a dude in the bottom window. So when they heard that somebody was trapped inside their apartment, they ran towards that window. They instructed the man to try getting out through a nearby door, but the fire apparently had already reached that entryway. And Brenneman Sorensen said they were forced to come up with a new plan. He said that's when me and Roz knew we had to bust open the screen and pull them out. So that's exactly what they did. They broke the window screen. There were two other residents of that same apartment complex who ran over. And the four of them were able to successfully get the man through the window. Roz said, I was kind of just in shock about everything that happened, but also proud of myself, too. Proud of everybody else that stepped up too. And, you know, we never do know what we're capable of in situations like that until we're in one, right? I mean, we like to think that we'd keep our wits about us. We like to think that we would help others in need. But you really don't know if that fight or flight instinct is going to, you know, which instinct is going to kick in until you're in that situation. So I think Charles Maurras has every reason to be proud of himself. But I'm glad that he also acknowledged the help of others there in saving that apartment dweller. No word on the extent of the damage to this complex and how many people were displaced, but in the right time, or in the right place at the right time, and willing and able to do the right thing, Caden Brenneman Sorensen and Charles Maurras, along with those unidentified Good Samaritans there in La Crosse, Wisconsin, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right. Again, on tomorrow's programming, we talk about some wicked deeds in the Old Dominion, the final passage of multiple gun control bills taking place today. Stephen Kataski of The Reload is going to be with us to go over all of the details, talk about the lawsuits that are impending in both state and federal court. Wish it was a better way to close out the week than talking about how my rights and Stephen's rights and the rights of millions of Virginians are about to be infringed upon. But, you know, we cover the good, the bad, and the ugly here at Bearing Arms Scam & Company, and tomorrow's just one of those ugly days. Hope that you have a great Hump Day Wednesday. Thank you so much for being a part of the program today. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day today, keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including what's going on in the Commonwealth of Virginia. Interesting story out of California, where California Attorney General Rob Bonta has reluctantly acknowledged that, yes, more guns, less crime is in fact a thing. Tom Knighton's got a piece about the Southern Poverty Law Center. And the federal investigation and the SPLC's ties to gun control, that's worth checking out as well. And we've got much more for you there at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold or VIP Platinum member. Just go to BearingArms.com/subscribe. Use the promo code FIGHT. And you can take 60% off your membership. No matter what tier of support you choose, whether it's VIP, VIP Gold, VIP Platinum, you get some great benefits. And to be supporting the work that we do at Bearing Arms, and I want to thank you very much for that. I will say, though, VIP Gold and Platinum members, you get to take part in our weekly VIP live chats with Hot Air's Ed Morrissey and myself. That happens every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Today, no exception. Would love for you to be a part of that next week. And, again, thank you very much for being a part of the program today. Until we talk again, be well, be safe, and be free.